I am Edie Swift, and it is April 30th, 2018, and I'm interviewing John Elton, a volunteer at the Grevillea Park in Bulleye. He will talk about his involvement in the Grevillea Park, and the oral history will go into the local studies library at Wollongong Library. So would you like to start talking about how you became involved?
Well, I visited the park probably 4 years ago when we moved down the south coast. And there was a sign out the front which was asking for volunteers. And because I've always been interested in native plants, I decided to volunteer and have been going there for the last 3 years. So it's just an innate love of Australian plants and grevilleas in particular. So there wasn't a great sell job on me. No one asked me to do it. It was just something that that I thought I'd do. I was impressed by the park, impressed by the work that had been done there by just a few volunteers. A remarkable achievement. So I thought I'd had something to contribute.
And what did you do when you first got there?
When I first got there, I worked with Ray, who's the park manager, and we just spent some time mulching some gardens. That was my first day there. But every week you go to the park, you tend to do something different. So as a park manager, Ray is very careful to make sure that people don't get bored with just doing the one job. So we might plant plants 1 week, we might build a bridge the next week, we might cut a walkway through the bush, we might do some pruning. A whole range of things. So every week is quite different because it's a large park. It's 40 acres or so. A lot of it's outside the gates of the park, but there's an enormous amount of work to do. We just can't keep on top of it just in the day we're there. So it's certainly a never-ending challenge to keep on top of things.
So do you, you've been there for 3 years, mm-hmm. and what date did you start?
Oh, I can't remember. I would have gone to the April open day, which is the May open day, the autumn open day. So I probably would have begun maybe in May of 2015.
And what did you do? What is one of the projects, the main project that you were involved in recently?
Well, there's been no main projects because we do something different each week, but in the last month we've been cutting a new track through the rainforest, building some bridges, inserting a stairway so that people can cut across the rainforest up to the facilities at the top of the park. But we've all been working on that over the past 6 weeks or so. And that's been a matter of doing some clearing, doing some building, moving some logs, moving some rocks, and just really taking instruction from Ray, who has the vision for what needs to happen there. So this is the first time that people going to the park will get to see the results of those 6 weeks. So it's fairly impressive. There's also a platform that we've built that looks over the dam, and that's the first time people have been able to access the dam. So it's a different sort of perspective I'll get of the park when they come this open day.
So you put in, what did you put in so that people could go to the platform?
Well, it's a path to the platform, and then there's a platform that's built from timber that goes out, juts out to the water. But along that, when you're going along the path and you reach a depression in the path, you then put a bridge across that depression, and the bridge may be over an area where you need water flow when it rains heavily. Because we get a lot of water through the park during heavy rain because it comes down from the escarpment. So it really just a number of bridges and platforms and clearing areas through the track, putting sides on the tracks, putting some timber on the sides so that it's accessible by wheelchair, pram, nice flat area, most of it. There are some steps there, but the majority of it's fairly flat, so it's meant to be an area that everyone can access, not just a few people.
So where did the wood come from?
Oh, we have to buy it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So we only get out. Well, some of the banks we can use, some of the cut timber that's up in the park, but most of the maintenance of the park comes from our funds, and our funds are generated simply by our open days. So we have 12 open days a year, and those open days provide our funding for the full 12 months. And that's, we don't get anything from government, anything from anyone else. It's just, it's fully funded by people coming into the park and people buying plants. So we're on a fairly tight budget. We don't have a great deal of money to spend.
So when you did you do some pruning during the 3 years that you've been there?
Oh, yeah, we do. You know, after the spring open days, we spend probably a good 2 months pruning. So it's an enormous job. It's not just a matter of cutting a few things off. So a lot of the grevilleas get cut back by about half. So if you think about a 3 metre plant, you're pruning those back to 2 metres using chainsaws, using hedges, using secateurs, but it's an enormous job. So occasionally Mount Annan Botanic Gardens will come down and help us out. So we sort of get a lot more hands on deck, people who know what they're doing as well. Because a lot of the volunteers are not plant people. They volunteer because they like volunteering and like helping out, but their knowledge of plants is not particularly strong. So,
but how do you prune? I can't understand why you have to.
Well, because it's what you're doing is you're getting the garden to a phase where you can display it to the public. And the only way to encourage bushy, fresh growth is to prune it. And that's where you get your new flowers as well and the new growth. So if we were to leave the plants go, they'd be leggy and straggly, and they wouldn't be attractive for people to come and have a look at. So you prune plants to get the best out of them. I mean, we're not talking about plants you just grow in nature. These are plants that are in display gardens that are put there for a specific purpose. And to showcase native plants, you need to prune them.
So where do you cut them?
Well, that's probably a fairly difficult question because what you're trying to do is bushy the plant up. So it depends on the plant that you're pruning. But normally, if you think about a plant that's 2 metres high, you might make a ball out of it, a metre. So you just go, imagine just shaping the plant like a ball.
And what do you use to shape it?
Hedges and chainsaws. If the plant's small, you use secateurs, but most of the plants there will use chainsaws and hedges. So these are things that people would not normally do in their own gardens. And that's part of Ray's expertise. So he knows how to do those sorts of things, and he teaches us how to do those sorts
and
of things.
And what would it make the plant look like then?
Well, when it's first pruned, it looks as like it's had a crew cut.
Oh.
You know, so you imagine it's like a person with long hair. If you gave them a crew cut, that's what the plant looks like, and all the new growth comes away. So plants respond really, really well to pruning. Most plants, not all of them. The ones that don't, you've got to be very careful with, and they, you tend to leave those alone.
And that's right after the first?
No, after the flowering. So because we open in the first 2 weekends in September, we then prune. And the idea of the pruning is that we want to get those plants ready for the following September. So when we have our open days in autumn and in winter, they tend to be different sorts of plants that are coming into flower. But the main flowers people come to see are the big tropical grevilleas, and they're the ones that we prune back in September.
Oh, I see. And when do you have time so that you're taught?
Oh, you learn on the job.
He just
so you watch Ray, but Ray won't let everyone prune. Imagine when you prune, you will have on a Monday, let's say we prune for 4 hours, you'll have some people pruning, some others clearing up the rubbish, some others loading it up and dumping it up the top where we've got some areas where we can mulch the remains. So, it's not as if everyone's pruning. He'll generally get people who know something about plants to prune, and the others will labour and do other things. But you might then have someone who is watering for 4 hours because we're up there one day a week and you've got to get the plants growing. So someone might, water for 4 hours every Monday. So there's always different jobs. Not everyone prunes at the same time. But even when we had Mount Annan up there, there's a crew of about 10, and they all spent a full day there, and we didn't get halfway through the job. So that gives you an idea of how many prunings there are.
And you have to do that area as you go out of the gate in the back as well.
Not so much out there. The only maintenance out there is really keeping the tracks clear and safe. So that's really natural bush. That's different.
And where does the water come from the escarpment? Where does it go?
Well, it flows down into a dam. There's a dam in the park. It flows into a dam. The others just go into drains and just like normal stormwater. They just leave the park like they would leave your property as stormwater.
Yeah, but I've never seen any creek come in.
Oh, look, I don't know the area well enough, but there are creeks around the area. I don't know which creeks the stormwater flows into, so I'm not sure about that.
I have gone up and done the trail near the creek. And then,
I don't know where that creek flows.
That's what I don't.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
So, did you do some painting at one stage?
I don't do the painting, but there are a couple of people there who'll do that. So, the Sherbrooke Chapel, which is at the top of the park, has been painted. There's a little shed when you come into the park that's been painted. The stairs. There's all sorts of little painting jobs, but there are a couple of people who work on that. That's not me. Mm-hmm. I tend to do more plant stuff. There are people who like doing the painting and repairing timber work and those sorts of things. I don't have skills in that area.
And so do you meet every morning for morning tea?
Oh, we get start at the park. We work for a couple of hours and we have morning tea together. Then we work for a few more hours. Then usually finish between 1 and 2 o'clock of a Monday.
And what other jobs have you done while you're there that you can remember?
Well, the only other thing that I do, apart from what I've told you, is I look after the publicity now. So I will let the newspapers know, the radio stations know, the garden clubs know, Probus clubs, Lions clubs, Rotary clubs know that when the garden's going to be open. And the only way I can do that is via email, because we don't have money to spend on publicity. My job is to try to tell as many people as possible that the park's open, and Tracy is the other person who does that, and she set up a Facebook page and she posts Facebook photos every week pretty much, and that has a few thousand people following the park. So we hope to get word out that way, and then on the open days we have a sign on the main road saying the Grevillea Park's open, and we just hope that the people come and have a look around.
So do you have to email everybody? How do you get the emails?
I just look up the emails. I Google the emails and look them up. I just build up a list over time, and I tend to send personalised emails rather than an email to everyone. I'll email everyone individually and spend, it takes a few hours, but it's worth doing it that way. I think people respond to personal emails more than they do a bulk email that just tries to address everyone.
Do you go on the radio ever when
I will ring up the radio on the Friday before open day and do a community service announcement. I do that. Ray has been interviewed on Sydney Radio and Illawarra Radio quite frequently, and sometimes newspapers cover the Mercury, the Australian, the Sun Herald, South Coast Register. Those sort of groups have run stories on the park as well. So you just sort of try to get your word out there and hope people come and have a look at the park.
What is the next project you're going to do?
Oh, we're probably going to put a slab hut in the park and build an edible vegetable garden, an edible Australian native vegetable garden around it, but that's probably maybe a year or so off because again it's a financial consideration. So, but we've got enough material to build the slab hut, but there's a fair bit of work and planning to go into that yet. But that's probably going to be the next project.
So you have all the wood you need
old,
for it?
Yeah, there's some old slabs sort of sitting at the top of the park that we can use.
Where are they're just there?
Oh, they would have been collected by Ray at some stage. He would have seen a possibility. Someone was throwing something out, so he said the park will have them, and so he stored them up there. So,
how did he get them up there?
I have no idea. Way before my time.
Do you use mechanized things to get around?
No. The only thing we've mechanized in the park is a ute, and we just we transfer things around in the ute. But there's nothing else in the. We don't own anything else.
Do you get rid of things? Like, if you have stuff that you've cut Does that, do you put that in something and take it out somewhere?
Well, we tend not to have any waste. The only wastage you really have are from prunings. And those prunings are put in an area where they rot down.
Oh, I see. Yeah. You don't take them out.
Oh, you couldn't. You couldn't because like today, for example, mm-hmm. we moved 8 truckloads of cuttings today as we cleaned up the park for the weekend. So that's, you just couldn't afford to take that to the tip. So the park has some areas at the very top that allow us to put the cuttings so that they rot down.
Were you involved with the doors on the chapel because they had vandalism?
No.
I wasn't involved with
repairing those. Mm-hmm. But a few of the other fellows know how to repair the doors and do those sorts of things, but not me.
Now, do you have to bring soil in there?
No.
There's enough soil for...
Well, the beds are, there's a lot of coal wash that was brought in. When the park was first built, there was a lot of filling brought in from off-site. Now, I don't know the details of that, but we're not planting into areas that are new gardens. We're planting into beds that have been established in the past and that need refurbishing. So even today, we would have pulled out 10 dead plants, large dead plants that, you know, from the drought that we're having, that, you know, because it's been dry. And obviously, they'll need to be replaced, so we'll then just plant into those same areas.
Were they dead? And were they grevillea?
Yeah, all sorts of plants. But some grevilleas, yeah.
But usually you have enough water because it rains, and right now you don't.
It's very dry. I mean, because you have a lot of rain doesn't mean that your area is going to be wet. There are a lot of eucalypts there that suck a lot of water out of the soil. So there are parts of the park that are wet, and there are parts of the park that are very dry. There are parts of the park that have clay soil. There are parts of the park that are pretty much rock. So, you know, you plant things and you hope they'll grow. Some things grow, some don't. And just as in a normal garden in someone's house, you know, some things you plant grow, some things don't. And you learn what grows, you learn what doesn't. When things die, you put other things in.
What are you going to put in?
I'll probably put grevilleas in, but, you know, we've only just taken those out today, so a lot will depend on what grevilleas Ray has, because Ray grows a lot of the grevilleas. He also collects grevilleas from the wild, so he'll have a license, go out, collect plants in Western Australia, bring them back, graft them onto Eastern Australian species so that they grow in the park, and then he'll plant them. But you know, it's whatever's available at the time. So I don't know what is going to be available when we plant, you know, probably in another couple of months' time.
Where's that area where it died?
Oh, just in different spots all over the park. I mean, you can walk around the park and you say there's a plant that needs to come out because it's died. There might be 10 plants around it that are living and growing okay. Some plants just reach their lifespan and die.
So it just seems like this drought, it would really affect that.
Oh, the drought's affected it. The drought has affected it because the plants don't have as much vigour. You know, they look a bit hungry, if you like. But, you know, you have good seasons as well, and you have bad seasons, and that's the same with everyone's garden, except that with the park, you're only there one day to try to look after it, you know, whereas in your own garden, you can be out there, and if you have 3 or 4 hot days together, you can water up at the park. If you have 3 or 4 hot days, you wait till the Monday to go, and then you water it, and you only get to water maybe a tenth of the plants. So, you know, the plants have really got to survive on their own most of the time.
So with this drought, do the plants look quite different than what it usually looks like for the open day?
Yeah, they look a little different. They're not quite as plump. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but the flowers aren't quite as big. When you have a good year, there's a vibrancy about a plant. You know, and while some plants are looking very, very good, there are others that, you know, clearly need a bit of a drink.
Will you get a lot of rain, do you think, in May and up in June?
I don't think we're due for any. Not that I've heard of
anyway.
Not
this year. But
no, I haven't. Yeah. But normally, I mean, last year was a very good year, so we had a lot of rain last year. The garden was really looking nice. It's looking nice now, but it's probably not looking as good as it did last year.
Why does Ray have to go all the way to Western Australia to get grevilleas?
Oh, because there are plants there, grevilleas there, that you will not find anywhere else. They only grow in West Australia.
And he takes them and brings them over here.
Well, the park began as a place to put the wild grevillea collection. So there's a wild grevillea collection from the Australian Plant Society that Ray kept at his place. Part of the justification for the park was a place to put these plants. And there are a lot of plants from Western Australia, Northern Territory, South Australia, the desert, that you simply can't grow in your garden unless they're grafted. And even then, you know, you have to have the expertise that Ray has to grow some of these.
Yeah, but how would you grow them here? They're not native to here.
No, he grafts them.
You mean they will grow?
Yeah, they'll grow. So he gets some, for example, there's an Eastern States grevillea called Silky Oak, which a lot of people know. It's a very big plant. And Ray will get some cutting from a plant in Western Australia and he'll graft it onto that Silky Oak. So the plant is growing on the roots of the Silky Oak, which will grow here. But if you tried to plant a lot of the West Australian plants here, they'd live for 6 months and die.
How, don't you have to put fertilizer in there?
Not usually.
Oh.
Not usually.
Why is that?
Well, if you think about Australian soils, Australian soils are fairly devoid of nutrients. So these plants are growing in soils that are devoid of nutrients, so they're particularly phosphorus. So they don't need it. You know, and some plants will respond well to a bit of fertiliser, but you can't use the fertiliser you use on roses or azaleas or other plants. You've got to use native plant food, which is very low in phosphorus. The park's there to grow plants, and the plants have got to learn to survive on their own.
Now, did these grevilleas start in Australia and they're only in Australia?
There are some that extend beyond Australia. So in the park we have a couple of grevilleas from New Caledonia, but they're really, most of them are just endemic to Australia.
And did they start a long time ago being native?
Well, it's all Gondwana land stuff. So when Australia split off from Asia, our fauna and our flora grew in a unique way. It's why kangaroos are in Australia, because we were isolated and cut off from everywhere else. It's why our banksias are very different to everywhere. Our grevilleas, our flora is quite distinct from other areas in the world.
In your garden at home, do you bring things into the garden, the Revillia Park, from your garden?
No.
You don't do that?
No, because I don't. It tends to be the other way around. I'll get stuff from the Revillia Park and put in my garden.
And Ray has a whole collection of plants in his house, outside his house.
He grows the plants for the park.
Does he have, one of those hot houses?
He's got a hot house, yes.
So and he can grow a whole lot of plants.
Yeah, Ray's very skilled.
How many?
At his place, thousands.
He must have a huge hot house.
No, because you grow plants, if you think about something the size of a newspaper, you would get maybe 200-300 cuttings in something like that. Then you pop them up, after they've been in the greenhouse, you pop them up outside. But he'd have a couple of thousand plants at his place. And so we'd then bring those up, plant them in the park, and then we'd sell them on open days.
Oh, so the plants that you have on open day come from Ray's collection?
Pretty much.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, do you have success with people coming and buying them?
Yeah, well, that's the only way we survive. If they don't buy the plants, we have no money to do anything, so.
How about some membership? How's the membership?
The membership?
Yeah.
Well, there are only about 10 volunteers, but there are really no members as such. I mean, I think initially when the park was set up, there was a membership drive, but I think the park probably outgrew that because everything revolved around the open days and volunteers coming up. So the volunteers and the open days are really what the park's about.
So when we pay our $5...
to get in?
Does that mean that we're members?
No.
Oh.
The $5 when you come in is just for the entry to the park. And that helps us provide the facilities and helps us to put the plants in. And, it's a fairly meagre income we get, because we have to pay insurance, we have to pay water, we have to pay for the plants, even though Ray grows them, it's a cost to grow the plants. We have to pay for all of those things, and we have to get that income from 12 days per year. 12 open days.
So have you had a lot of people want to join you have the open day?
No. No, we don't have many people joining at all.
Would you like more members?
Obviously we'd like more people volunteering, but it's of a Monday, which makes it difficult. So really it locks you down mainly to retired people. But it's also very physical work. So it's not just getting a pair of secateurs in your hand and pruning a few plants, you know, it can be physically demanding. So you tend to get people who are fit and active doing it. Anyone else tends not to get too involved, although, you know, Ray can always find work for anyone. But we tend not to. I think since I've been there, there's only been one other, in 3 years, there's only been one other person joined.
Oh, and who was he, the community person who came
yeah.
in?
Mm.
As a community person,
mm.
he had
and
to
he
do community service.
Mm, no,
yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. How are the people that are there?
How old are the people?
Who are the people that are there?
Oh, they're just different people from different walks of life. They're just...
Your volunteers?
All volunteers,
How
yeah.
many do you have?
There's about 10 in total.
I don't know all of them then because...
Well, some of them are just people who come and help out at open days because they work or
Oh, I see.
You know, so hmm. you interviewed Hessel, for example.
Uh-huh.
Hessel only comes on the open days.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people who come and help out on open days because they are still working. Overall, though, on a Monday morning, we might, you know, it's usually 7 or 8 people in total.
And why are you building this slab hut?
Just adding a new dimension to the park.
Yeah, but don't you have something you're going to put in there?
Oh, we will work on that. It might be a display area. It might be a picnic area. We don't know yet. It's just you know, the mm-hmm. plans are there and we'll make a decision as we move forward. But, you know, it's in its sort of tentative stage at the moment.
Is it going to look like a real hut that'll have 4 sides?
No, I think it'll probably have 3 sides, probably be open, I would think. But again, I am not sure where it's going to go because it's probably still in Ray's head. He's the person with the vision.
Do you have a lot of animals that you see in there?
Oh, birds.
A lot of birds.
Birds and, you know, you occasionally might see an echidna
mm-hmm.
And some water birds down around the dam, but really, you know, birds are what you'll see in there rather than anything else.
It was mentioned in one of the other interviews, I guess Peter Sorensen, that there might be a road going through the park
mm.
in the future. Is that really something that's going to happen?
Oh, I think it will happen.
Can you do anything?
No. We've been talking to RMS. We've got the Minister for the Illawarra, Gareth Ward.
Mm.
So we've had meetings with him.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll hopefully be able to negotiate to, when the road goes through and takes half the park, we're hoping to negotiate to move the park up the hill further.
The whole park?
Hmm.
How would you do that?
Well, that's Ray's vision. So there are areas at the top that we could clear and replant.
But is this road going to go through and split it in half?
It'll take off the bottom half of the park.
Where? Where would it go?
Well, the bottom part where all the display gardens are. So you'd have to build new display gardens at the top of the park.
Well, has Gareth Ward helped you? Will he be able to help you?
No, well, he's been helpful in facilitating meetings.
Hmm.
But really, until we have plans from RMS...
What's that?
Oh, it'd be the Northern Distributor.
Oh.
Is what it would be called.
Uh-huh.
Really, it's to take the main traffic from around Thoreau, sort of, you know what Thoreau's like. But it's to obviously unclog the roads to get around the increasing congestion around this area. But I don't know too much about the details of that. So my job has just been to help facilitate the meetings, get in touch with Gareth, get him to the park, get RMS to the park.
What's RMS?
Roads and Maritime Service.
So you all meet there.
We've had a meeting there. And we'll have another meeting in a couple of months' time as a progress report to see what's happening. Hmm.
So you meet with who?
Well, we met with Gareth Ward and some people from RMS who are involved in planning whatever may happen in the future.
Everybody in the group, all the volunteers?
No, just not all the volunteers, but a couple of us. You know, mm-hmm. volunteers were around, some of them came along, but you know, it's up to them if they wanted to get involved in the meeting. But really they were just sitting and listening because it was more information. Ray's the main person at the meeting to ask the questions and the others are there to answer his concerns.
So do you see yourself doing some more projects? Can you think of... Oh, that vegetable garden, how are you going to do that? Where are you going to put that?
Well, near the slab hut.
So there's room up there.
Oh, there's room.
I don't know where that is, that room.
That's 3/4, about halfway up the hill. There's a big Banksia garden there. We'd go just near the big Banksia garden.
Before you go through the gate?
Oh, no, it's not before you go through the gate. It's as you go through the gate. halfway toward halfway up the park.
I see.
Toward the new development on the left-hand side.
Mm-hmm. So you'd have to really work with some type of to level it.
Probably we might need to get some machinery into that.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine you would. Mm. Is there anything else you'd like to mention?
No, it's a good group of people, and it's a good place to work of a Monday morning, and the park has a nice scientific basis, so it's a place that that plants can be tested and grown and reported on, and that's an asset to the community.
Oh, it sure is, Well, thank you very much. Would you donate this to the local studies library
that's fine.
At Wollongong?
Yep.
Okay, great.